Welcome to Cinema Savants, your weekly dose of movie news, movie reviews, and the occasional rumor, with your hosts, Todd Vandenberg and Rob Steele.
The government may be shut down and we could see Jacksonville in the Super Bowl. But we're still here with a plus one. Lee Vowell has joined us again, and coming up in this week's show, the WWE Raw is about to make history. The Emoji Movie has made history. And Star Wars is history in China. But first, we've got a weird thing with the whole sexual misconduct story and leading to what I'm sure is going to be a that's what she said joke. This part of the show is important, but it won't take too long. Anyway, weird stuff from the Aziz Ansari story that we've kind of been going over, where it now really, really sounds like a post I met a star regrets thing. Have you seen the details about what? Because she released details about what they did. And it sounds a bit odd. The story as it is now being told is he performed an oral act on her before anything else of a massively sexual nature happened. At that point, to me, that went immediately into the I met a star regret, because if there's any kind of... I've never heard of oral rape where a man and a woman are involved in the story where... It's not her doing him first. Is there another way of saying that that's better? Or does that make sense to anyone? Is that just me?
No.
No, because like if you're tied, and now I'm doing it, but if you're tied up and you're doing it against your will, but usually when someone is doing that to you, you're doing it openly and freely and you're okay with it. So I just, rape is nothing, right? Rape is nothing, obviously, a joke around about, but you said oral rape, and she, you know, he's doing it to her instead of the other way around, so, you know, take that for what it is.
It was a bizarre twist for me, and I'm not against this movement. I think it's overdue, but at the same time, when you hear a story like that, you kind of go...
Which movement are you talking about? Are you still talking about? I'm not sure if we've changed the subject. Are we on to something else altogether?
Like the Me Too movement coming out against all the stars that are abusing power and stuff. Which movement were? I'm not even going there anymore.
Lee, you're going to a very dark place, and that pun is intentional. The whole thing with the Aziz Ansari is really strange, because a lot of the people in the forefront of the Me Too movement are kind of. It's caused a lot of controversy within it, because some feminists are saying, okay, this is going too far because this is a date gone wrong as opposed to a sexual assault. And then others are coming back as, no, this is sexual assault. And it all boils down to, you know, how the person on the receiving end takes it. She takes it as sexual assault, and you kind of have to go with that, I think. To his credit, he's accepting that. He's not saying, oh, no, this is, you know, he's saying, oh, my God, I did not know that's how she felt.
Right.
Which, you know, if she's giving, as she said, at least as quoted in the article, if she's giving verbal and nonverbal cues, he should have picked up on that. But like I said, last time we talked about this, and we'll probably talk about this forever.
Yeah.
Why would you say I gave, quote, verbal and nonverbal cues as opposed to I said, no, don't do this?
Right, because she's not, and I don't mean a joke by this, but she's not doing anything with her mouth. So she could say, she's able to say no or anything.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. So I'm kind of confused about, okay, how, if you didn't say no, then that makes it, now you're going into this gray area. And I can see why this may be a symbol for the entire situation. Because there is a gray area. You know, on one hand, you have stars who are, let's say, past their prime, like Brigitte Bardot, Catherine Deneuve. They both come out and said, oh, this is all, you know, how are guys going to date? And this is really silly, which is, frankly, they're misguided at best. because we're not talking about flirtation. But when you move into the season Zari thing, now you're really getting into, okay, how can women signal other than saying no? Is it okay? You know, it's, and I'm doing the thing is I'm not sure what I want to say. Yeah, I'm sure what I want to say.
Blow a whistle and throw a flag.
Yeah, exactly. Is it necessary for women to carry like a rape whistle? And that's the, and okay, this means no. Or if you give verbal / nonverbal cues, should men pick up on that? Well, of course they should. But this is what makes it really difficult. It's not a black and white issue when you get to this point. I mean, stuff with certain former newscasters that have a button under the desk that locks the door, that's black and white.
Yeah.
But when you get into these...
I didn't know Donald Trump was a former newscaster.
Oh, God. We could do a 10-hour show on that pig and barely touch the surface. Anyway.
Pigs are orange.
Yeah. They can be, if with the right sauce, yes.
Oh, silly me. Buffalo.
Make sure you don't eat the bone spurs, though.
Right. Anyway, actually, yeah, speaking of bone spurs and this subject, you know, while we're at it, there is a trailer for HBO's Joe Paterno film called...
What a horrible segue.
It's thank you. The Paterno film, which is, it could have kind of kicked off this movement in a sense, in a weird kind of way. Al Pacino is starring as Joe Paterno. What do you guys... Is it too soon for a film like this? Or is this just the right
I think
time
it's too
it?
Soon to say bone spur when you're referring to, you know, the Joe Paterno situation. That was just... I had something... had liquid in my mouth, almost spewed all over the computer. When you said that.
As long as it's not that Sam Adams thing that Todd's mixing with barbecue sauce. Not
wonderful Sam Adams 76.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not.
Sponsored by Sam Adams 76, which is not a good beverage at all. Sam Adams, you have failed me. Yes. Anyway, no, this is couldn't be more timely. I'm really curious to see what the approach is.
Yeah, me too.
How sympathetic. It'll be really interesting. That's the best I can say. I'll definitely watch it unless I hear it's just a whitewashing and oh, poor Uncle Joe didn't know what was going on, which would be BS.
You would have, because it's read. HBO, it wouldn't be though. You know, I mean they
right.
tend to not go with easy stuff. So hopefully
exactly. And that's another. I mean, because I don't know that anyone really knows exactly how much he knew when he knew what was going on. Obviously, from what everything we've read, at some point he knew what was going on and didn't take appropriate steps. So it'd be interesting to see how this plays out. But any opportunity to see Al Pacino be intense, I'm all for that. I hope there's at least one scene where he's coaching, because that'll be fun. And then the rest of it can be about what matters.
Mm-hmm. And he's been a football coach before, so it's not like this.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like Todd. I'm curious to see what how they actually portray not just Paterno but the whole situation. Mm-hmm. They may go with Paterno is okay, but the rest of the situation is horrible, which is not something we want to see either. Because you know he's a head football coach in a program for 800 years. He pretty much has to know everything that's going on in that. You know, for him to say he didn't know anything, it's obviously it's different subject than a movie, but or a miniseries or whatever this is. But yeah, I mean, hopefully they don't portray him as, like Todd said, oh, I don't know anything, because clearly he had to.
You know, it'd be a weird twist if Corey Feldman plays Sandusky. That would be a really strange cast.
I wonder who is playing Sandusky.
I haven't heard. That'd be an interesting part to play.
Looking it up. While you're looking that up, though, another sports-related that goes into our entertainment field story. A guy named Richard Rodriguez this week, owner of Iron Addicts Gym in Miami, has implicated Mark Wahlberg, Josh Duhamel, and WWE Intercontinental Champion Roman Reigns in a steroid distribution ring. Now, I don't know what exactly that does for actors. I know Roman Reigns has been suspended a couple times or something for the wellness policy violation. But
wellness.
Yeah. What do you guys think of Wahlberg, and I'm not even sure I know who Josh Duhamel is at this point.
I don't either. When I first saw the name, I was thinking, is that Queens of the Stone Age? What is that?
Josh Duhamel is an independent film kind of guru, writer, director. He's done some really pretty cool films. Looking at him, there's no way he's ever taken one of these products himself. I'm just like looking at me, but I mean, it's not like he's, oh my God, he's a slob. He's just not remotely athletic. He's just, he's got the dad bod. That's all.
He's the guy who looks kind of like Carl Urban and, Hitman. What was his name? Anyway,
he looks, his face does, but his body doesn't, I don't know how he got involved in this. I guess he thought, oh, this is a really money, this is a money making opportunity. Cause like I said, I don't think he's ever been in a gym in his life because he doesn't need to be for the roles he plays. That name was a weird inclusion.
Yeah.
Not a cool thing to do, guys. Basically, don't be criminals. That's a bad thing.
If it's true, we don't.
Right.
Yeah. It's implications. The only comment I've actually heard come out of this came from Roman Reigns, who said, who the hell is Richard Rodriguez? Which, you know, that's the way you're supposed to go with it, I think, if, you know, but actually, other note with that, Monday, this is the WWE Makes History part thing. Monday Night Raw's 25th anniversary is, oddly enough, Monday. And I've been reading the rather healthy list of wrestling legends that are scheduled to appear and go through their 5,000-hour entrance. So in this three-hour show, we might have enough time for maybe half a match. So if you actually want to watch wrestling, I'm going to suggest you watch something else. Just a thought.
That's pretty pathetic. But then again, professional WWE has been pathetic for about a decade at least, in my view. Yeah, it's.
I'm not going to actually tell any of them that to their face. But
oh
yes.
No, not at all. Because I value my life, but.
And they've been buying steroids from Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah.
And Josh Duhamel.
Josh Duhamel.
Apparently, no one has been cast yet, other than Mr. Pacino. Yeah. So it's all up in the air. And that had been delayed for a couple of years because of budget considerations, which is weird because when does HBO worry about money? Right. But anyway.
What kind of a budget do you need for a... It's not like there's going to be special effects and dragons and stuff.
I guess they got to pay Al Pacino. Apparently, Sony Pictures Television is a co-producer, which Sony is kind of flush in cash right now because they've had some success stories. So, yeah, maybe that's why they got the green light. Anyway. Yeah, WWE... Yeah, it just sucks. It's not entertaining. And obviously, it's entertaining to millions of people still, but wrestling ratings have been down for like a decade. And
well, it's the lack of the Monday Night Wars competition thing.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And it's the lack of creativity. And it's, I don't know, creativity, talent. No one has replaced guys like Stone Cold or The Rock.
John Cena's trying, but. He's not quite there, I don't think.
He's not that kind of personality, though. I mean, he's a different kind of character than those guys were. he's not edgy like those guys were.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that's what it is, and they're missing that.
Speaking of edgy and unoriginal, Saudi Arabia.
Lady?
No, not Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia actually had a ban on showing movies in public for 35 years. I did not realize this. And it was lifted recently. And the first movie they showed after lifting this ban was the Emoji Movie. And immediately afterwards, it was reinstated so they can never have to, you know. I mean, that was a really... That's a bad movie, and I can't, for the life of me, figure out why they wanted to start with that. And then, Todd, you said what? They followed it with Captain Underpants?
One of the Captain Underpants films. I'm not sure if it was the first one. But
there's more than one.
Which is genius. That's the genius one, the first one.
Yeah. It's just mind-boggling that they would – why would you – why?
They have the internet. They can read reviews and go – we should not start with this.
Yeah. You know, they could have done The Incredibles, Finding Nemo.
No. There's a Babe. Girl. There's a girl in The Incredibles. I'm sure only guys are allowed in the theaters, I'm assuming. I mean, I'm not even joking. That's probably the case.
I think that was part of the why they went with family films, because they are allowing men and women to attend together.
Well, that's ridiculous.
For the first time.
I would never allow that.
I think that's what the deal is.
Well, in that case, I've got something for you later, Lee. That's later in the show.
Yeah, why on earth would you go with that? I mean, did they not look at anything? I mean, they could have gone with Coco. They could have. There are several films just in the past couple of years.
Well, I mean,
they
wouldn't go
with
Coco something
just because of the religious aspects of the whole thing. But yeah, I see. I mean, Emoji. I don't know what you guys thought. I thought it was fantastic. So I don't see what the disagreement here is. But I'm joking. I'm totally joking.
Well, it goes along with.
I need another beer to swallow that comment.
Wow. And it's a Sam Adams 76 that you're following that up with. Yeah, they could have. If you're going with a somewhat recent movie, which the Mushy movie, still is somewhat recent. But if you want a recent thing, kids' movie, Paddington 2, from what I understand, has just passed a. Was it Toy Story 2's record on Rotten Tomatoes for most consecutive positive reviews? I heard it was 164 when they broke the record. Friday, I saw it was 165. I looked at it a little while ago. It's up to 168 now.
And add Lee's, so that's 169, because Lee gave it a glowing review a couple weeks ago.
Yet, that's next. But yeah, 168 without a negative review. And it's my understanding that Lee is the only one of us who has seen it. So Lee, what did you think of the movie?
It was good.
So Todd, that's, I heard you saw some stuff.
That's our show.
No, it was great because it's great for a lot of reasons. First of all, the story, it's a little bit saccharine. It's going to have to be, of course, but it's well done. It's not just like hit you over the head with, oh, this is a sweetness. Because there's lots of personality in the film, but the director of the film just does this phenomenal job of allowing his own imagination to do things in the film. So it's not just like a cookie cutter film. So the story's really good. Paddington goes to jail and he meets some interesting people.
That's what I wanted to ask you. What the hell is Paddington doing in jail?
He gets set up by Hugh Grant. Hugh Grant's phenomenal in this film, by the way. And that's the other thing that makes the film so good, is that it's got all these English and Irish actor, Brendan Gleeson. And they're all just really great actors on their own. And then you put them, and they're just like Sally Hawkins is in this film. She'll probably be nominated for lead actress for Shape of Water. But you can tell they're having fun. Jim Broadbent's in it. He's having fun. But they're also, their roles, their characters are not, I'm here to fill space. Like, they all have a purpose in the film. And, you know, Paddington could be played by a human. I mean, it's that real. So the first one was fantastic. I don't know if you guys saw the first one. But it's kind of weird to talk about, oh, Paddington 2, it's a really great film. Because it really is a great film, not just for kids. I mean, it doesn't have any, like, biting humor. Like, it's got Kevin Hart or something in it, you know. So adults will like it, too.
Thank God.
Yeah. But it really is one of those films that adults and children can both enjoy it. The story doesn't get boring. It proceeds. It never gets bogged down by the storytelling. And the directing is just phenomenal.
So this is basically a reboot of HBO's Oz, is what you're saying.
It's fun. Well, the prison scenes are funny, and again, they're not simple. I mean, there's some gray area to the. I mean, sounds funny. There's some hard hitting scenes in it. You know what I'm saying?
my real question though is, so you saw the original Paddington film, which I had not seen. But you said that was also excellent.
It also got extremely good reviews, just mm-hmm. like this one. Yeah, they're both great. And again, it just goes back to the director isn't going into the film thinking, I'm going to make a movie that's going to make $200 million or whatever. He's like, I want to make something that's enjoyable for everybody. And he does that. So
which is awesome. That's what everyone's goal should be if you're making a film. It's like, that people are going to be, they're going to feel something. You might not feel like you're entertained, but you're going to feel something, in this case, entertained. So, yeah, you should never set out as a goal. It's like, I'm going to make a movie that's going to make hundreds of millions of dollars. If you make the right movie, hopefully it will. And then you can make another movie like it. So, cool.
Paddington 3 coming in 2 years?
Yeah, and there's some feel to it. It's almost Chaplin-esque, some parts of the film.
Really?
And in a good way. So, I think that's the last thing I'll say about it, but I think that's one thing that I really liked about the film as well.
Wow. Chaplin being your personal god.
Yes.
And I'm not kidding. Wow, that's really high praise. Seriously, that's really high praise from you. Wow, seriously. Chaplin-esque. See, now I have to go see it. Which, from what you had said before, from what you had said before, I was thinking, yeah, well, my kids are, when I was about to say they're gone, which makes it sound like they're dead, but not really. But I'll just go see it by myself. But when you said Chaplin-esque, it's like, okay, I'm sold. Because, yeah, that's extremely high praise from you. So now I'm really intrigued to see what this movie's like. Cool.
So how about the movies you saw, Todd?
The movies I'll start with when it finally comes around, Mary and the Witch's Flower, go see it. It kind of snuck up. I think it snuck up on everybody. They had a special premiere release on a Thursday night, which is, why would you do it on a, let's release a kid's movie on a Thursday night for a special event. Why wouldn't you do it on a weekend during the day? Anyway,
why do the kids need to go to school?
Yeah, jeez. But one thing at least was cool. They had the dubbed version at 7. They had the subtitled version at 8. I saw the subtitled version. Working off of 3 hours of sleep, I actually managed to fall asleep during this film, which is rare. It has nothing to do with the film. It had more to do with exhaustion. So I missed
Blade Runner trailer at the beginning.
That's what it was, the Blade Runner trailer, which lasts for 37 minutes. I missed the last 30 to 45 minutes, because I'm not exactly sure when I passed out and I woke up and the credits are rolling. It's like, yay. But I will say, from what I saw, this fits in perfectly with the Studio Ghibli group. I mean, it has the look. There are some scenes where people are just going to have to wait until they buy it on Blu-ray or digital or whatever, because there are some scenes where there are literally dozens of things within the frame and it's all moving so, going by so quickly that you can't really take it all in to see these amazing creature designs. Basically, it's a story of a young girl who just can't do anything right. She's like maybe 12, 13, somewhere in that range. She's gone off to live with her grandmother for a while because her parents are off. They had to go take another job in another town. And she's kind of a screw up. She can't do anything right. And then she finds out that she's actually a very, very powerful witch. And she winds up in a witch's academy and things go on from there. I can't say it's got a great ending because I didn't see it because I'm a dope. But from what I saw, great movie. Really fun, looks terrific. Miyazaki did not direct this film, but it sure looks like he did, and it sounds like he did. The music, I think this would be a terrific movie. No idea when it's actually going to hit American theaters again. No idea if it even will. I mean, since they did this weird one night premiere on a Thursday night, thanks guys for that. But
that's like when they're re-releasing the Miyazaki movies on Monday night and Wednesday night.
It's like, what are you guys doing? Anyway, Mary and the Witch's Flower, very cool flick.
Actually, go before we get to your other
maybe watch the whole thing.
Before we get to the other movies you saw, wanted to throw mine in because I actually saw a Miyazaki movie this week that I had not seen yet. Porco Rosso, which we hadn't mentioned at all in all the time we mentioned his stuff. And I don't know if you, have you seen that one?
I have not seen that one because
it's not as strong as his other stuff. Although it's got the same weirdness. It's still just as beautiful as all his other stuff. It's about an Italian World War I pilot who is never explained in the movie, but he's been cursed to become a pig. Don't know why. I mean, actually, just kind of a pig head, human body, still can fly a plane and is very good at it. So he becomes a fighter of sky pirates in Greece in a seaplane. with a smattering of a love story on top of it, that he may be in love with this woman, but there's another woman who's kind of forced to be with him because she's the mechanic. You kind of go, it's not really a classical Miyazaki type story, but there's still, you know, the strong female characters. Not so much on the we must save the planet environment thing that you have in a lot of his movies, but there's some beautifully done dogfight scenes between the planes. There are no dogs in the movie.
Oh, okay, good.
You know, apart from the pig aspect, it's not really that as fantastical. I'm not even sure if that's a word. As the other Miyazaki movies, you know, there's no moving castles, there's no witches on brooms. There's a guy with a pig's head. Other than that, it's people flying airplanes. So, you know, it's still good, but it's I want to say subpar for Miyazaki. So it was still fun to watch, but disappointing in that I was expecting more. Does that make sense? I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, it totally makes sense for Miyazaki because the expectation, I mean, that's a really, really high bar for Miyazaki.
It is.
But it still makes me interested. I mean, eventually I'll get around to watching it maybe in the next month or so because it's kind of like, well, you have to complete it. You have to watch all of his films. So
that's kind of what I'm doing.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So what else did you see? You said you saw a few things this week.
I saw a few things. I saw a Ghost Story, and which is streaming on various services. This has got a lot of when it came out, it had a lot of buzz about, wow, this is such a terrific film, et cetera, et cetera. And I finally got around to watching it. I'll just say I'm glad I did not see it in the movie theaters. This is the kind of film you would love, Rob, because there are several sequences that seem longer than they actually are. For instance, here's the story. A guy dies.
This is the Casey Affleck film, right?
Yeah, exactly. A Ghost Story.
Got it.
Exactly. Not Ghost Story, which was back in the late 80s. So A Ghost Story. It's about a relationship between a woman and her dead husband, basically, because they have this relationship. It's just an interesting slice of life thing. For about 6 or 7 minutes. Then he dies. And he comes back as, which I think it's pretty brilliant that they show him as the classic ghost apparition. He's literally wearing a bed sheet, a white sheet, with two holes cut out for the eyes. That's how they represent the ghost, which I think is really cool that they do that. And so he just kind of hangs out and watches his wife and how she grieves. And eventually she moves on. He stays in the house because he's haunting his house. Other people move in. He doesn't really interact with those people other than a couple of interesting little moments. But there's a scene which for me kind of summarizes the entire film. A friend brings over a pie, like sometime like maybe within a year of her husband's death. And so the wife sits down and she just starts eating the pie. And she just eats the entire pie. And it's literally 6.5-7 minutes where she's on the floor where they're back to the refrigerator eating an entire pie. No dialogue, nothing going on. Whoever is wearing the bed sheet, because hopefully they didn't actually pay Casey Affleck to wear a damn bed sheet for 80% of the movie, 85, watching her in the background.
See, I thought that was the thing. I thought he actually was in the bed. I thought the whole time he's in the bed sheet.
I hope he's in the bed sheet, but
you know, I thought you were saying they didn't, but I think that's how that was part of the gimmick is that he's actually in the, he is 80%. He's in the film.
But why does it have to be Casey Affleck? It could be anybody because it's someone wearing a bed sheet. I mean,
I agree, but
it was Kevin Hart.
Yeah, it could have been Kevin. Well, actually it was,
I'm sorry. No, Kevin, it was Chris Hart. Hardwick.
Yeah, it could have been Chris Hardwick. Definitely.
I get that confused.
So this scene lasts for almost 7 minutes and then she's eaten the entire pie and she runs off and vomits up the pie. That scene seems to last like 6 days. And a lot of the film, there's no dialogue. And I'm okay with slower paced films, unlike one of the co-hosts on this show. But this is...
I need a good sedative. I'll sleep to it tonight.
It's a study on grief. One critic says, takes so many fascinating and poignant turns in its study of grief, you hardly notice the sheet through the raw human emotion. There's not a lot of raw human emotion. There's a lot of standing around and not much happens, and a few things happen, and another 20 minutes goes by and a few things happen, and, you know, maybe 15 minutes goes by, and it winds up kind of looping through. I like the start of this, the central conceit of a ghost story. Yeah, there's a lot of conceit to this movie. This is supposed to, be a wonderful, artful statement film, and it is boring as all hell. It doesn't say anything except, you know, it sucks to have someone die.
I'm trying to figure out the reviews that I'm looking at, because I pulled this up. It got a 6.9 out of 10 on IMDb. I get that. 90% on Rotten Tomatoes. I get that. Mm-hmm. And if I'm reading this correctly, Roger Ebert somehow gave it 4 thumbs up.
Did he dig up
Siskel and just cut them off so he could bring them with him? What the hell?
Hey, I think you guys are missing. I don't want to give away the ending, but the last 10 minutes is, you know, because some of the scenes seem longer than they really are. And the last 10 minutes is really just Steve Martin and Bernadette Peters. And Steve Martin's explaining how some scenes seem longer than they really were.
I would have loved the movie if that had been the case. This movie is not good. And I actually watched this twice because this is the second movie that I fell asleep on while I was watching the damn thing. And I thought, you know what? And that was really more because it was so freaking boring. So I actually watched the whole thing again last night. So as one of our taglines is, we watch movies so you don't have to.
Now you don't have to.
Yeah, don't watch a ghost story. There are a lot of better films to watch. And obviously, films are extremely personal. But for me, this thing was literally a snooze fest. And why the hell did you bother getting Casey Affleck? I mean, like I said, he's in 15% of the film. Well, as far as
the same reason they got Scarlett Johansson to be a telephone a few movies ago.
Yeah, true. But in the scenes that he's actually in, and Rooney Mara plays the wife who actually really isn't in the film a whole lot because they move on. Anybody could have played those roles because they're not very compelling. They just aren't. The parts where they're alive, it's like, oh, okay, this could have been on daytime afternoon TV at 2 o'clock. Not a good movie. Wow. Yeah.
What did you think about the other one you saw, though? I know because you're a big and watch this be a complete genre change. I know you're a big Godzilla fan. And you saw a Godzilla movie this week that was new.
I didn't see a Godzilla movie. It's actually was released theatrically in Japan, but Netflix bought it. Godzilla, Monster Planet. It's a good movie. It's like half of a Godzilla movie, though. It's much more of a post-apocalyptic humanity, will they survive kind of film, because it's 10 to 20,000 years in the future. And I say 10 to 20,000 years because they mentioned both times. So oops. I'm not sure.
Because who needs continuity? It's a Godzilla movie.
Excuse me. Not enough Sam Adams 76. I'm assuming that's probably just an error in the translation. So there you go. And at any rate, there's not enough Godzilla in it, which is a frequent complaint for Godzilla films. But what's weird is it's animated. It doesn't take any more money to draw Godzilla than it does to draw, like, I don't know, a wrench. So kind of weird that there's not as much Godzilla in the film. And that's once Godzilla appears. Basically, humanity has abandoned Earth because Godzilla has taken it over and he's destroyed Paris. He's moved on. I'm not quite sure. I guess he swam. Like, he's aquatic, so he swam. He swam from Japan, and I guess he obliterated China and Russia and everything else on his way. So instead of figuring out how to fight Godzilla, they just leave the planet, which is, okay, that's kind of interesting. They come back, and there's one person who's dead set on he will fight Godzilla, and we did the wrong thing by abandoning the planet, and they come back. And they fight Godzilla. I mean, it's a cool movie, but it's, like I said, it's half of a Godzilla movie and more half of, I don't know, like a standard Japanese anime space opera. I liked it, but I wish there was more Godzilla in it. And there will be a lot more Godzilla, I assume, because there is a sequel, which I don't think it's open to Japan yet, but I think it is opening this year. And it ends on a cliffhanger, which I really didn't care for the ending because...
kind of odd for a Godzilla movie.
As Netflix describes it, it's episode 1. And I thought, well, that's a weird way to describe it. And after, and now I've seen the film, I can understand why they called it episode one, because if they did not follow up this movie, a lot of people would be upset, because I'm not talking about it ends on a cliffhanger like Empire Strikes Back or something. I mean, it's, and the next scene is, nope, it's credits. I was like, okay, that was really odd. I liked it. I mean, Godzilla fans should watch it. Anyone who likes anime should watch it. Not enough Godzilla in it for me, but yeah, it was fun. Briefly, I will mention a film that is also on streaming services, In the Heart of the Sea, which came and went and nobody really noticed it. Ron Howard directed it. Chris Hemsworth stars in it, has a great cast. And it's basically based, it's based on the true story of the event that inspired Moby Dick. And perhaps that's why it didn't really do well at the box office, because there's lots of scenes of whale murder all simulated, because, you know, they didn't really feel like going out and hunting down dozens of cachalots and killing them for a stupid movie. So I really enjoyed it. It's gotten middling reviews, but I thought it was a really, really good movie. Hemsworth is great. The whole cast is great. It's a very compelling, cool story of the what happened to the Essex. So look up Essex, E-S-S-E-X, and your Wikipedia if you want to find out what really happened with that ship. But I thought, really enjoyed it. Very cool.
You had mentioned in your previous review, I was going next, which was, you mentioned The Empire Strikes Back and space operas. I've got some utterly bizarre Star Wars news this week.
Woo!
I guess I'll start with the money aspect of it, because it was the highest grossing movie of 2017. And it has been pulled from theaters in China after 2 weeks because no one is going to see it.
Yeah.
It's made a whopping $2.4 million in China. There's just not an audience. Because, you know, we mentioned how the other movies just did not get shown there.
Right.
Something else. And this one is the really weird one. I don't get this. There is now The Last Jedi, the defeminized fan edit. I don't know if you guys saw this. There is a men's rights group, apparently called the MRA, because, yeah, that needs to be a thing. They edited all the women out of The Last Jedi. Well, mostly. It's now a 46-minute long movie.
Is it really that long? That's shocking.
there's just a ton of cuts. Chewie ends up eating the porg. There's a spoiler. Leia is there, but she's been reduced to just the occasional, yes, we should go do that thing. The general, whose name has absolutely escaped me. Purple hair.
Baldo,
what's her name?
Baldo.
Baldo. There we go. Her whole subplot doesn't exist, and the...
Thank God.
I was going to say, that's an improvement, yeah.
The kamikaze thing that she does at the end of it, yeah, spoiler, like you haven't seen it yet, is done by Poe, so they killed Poe in this version.
That's okay, too.
Yeah.
I'm starting to actually like this version.
It's just really... Wow. Goes along with, I guess, what they had, the Paterno movie. I don't know. It was just a weird story that came across. Now, what do you guys make of this?
Actually, I'll jump in. My 10-year-old, who Fiona, who certainly is not pro-male or pro-female. I mean, she definitely does. Like, she went to the march yesterday in Nashville, for instance. But when we left the movie, she said, it was weird because all the women were on the good side and none of them were on the bad side. It seems like they would make that more equal. That's what she said as soon as we left the film, which I thought was interesting.
Well,
I was like, that is true.
That's actually inaccurate because Captain Phasma was on. Oh, yeah.
She Captain
Phasma
count.
Doesn't really count. Exactly. Exactly. She has zero impact in the film. Yeah, that is interesting, isn't it? Because looking back through the entire sequence, storyline, saga, are there any evil females? Other than Phasma, who doesn't count? I can't think of a single one.
There was Boba Fett, bounty hunter that was going after Queen Armadillo in Attack of the Clones. Other than that... I've called her Armadillo for years, and if you don't like it, you'll have to get over it.
the whole thing of the men only edit, that's just so I don't know, dumb, stupid, weird.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Why? I had to look up the last, because I couldn't remember exactly how much The Last Jedi dropped in China in its second weekend. It dropped 92% in its second weekend, which of course was its last weekend.
Ouch.
Which again goes back to, why wouldn't you guys like maybe release the first three films so people would have an understanding of what this is about? It's like, how could you be that ignorant? Anyway.
Yeah. Moving on. Actually, you had something, Todd, that you wanted to mention last week about Captain America, sticking with Disney.
Did I?
And Steve Rogers in his old suit.
Did I really? Yeah, there's been some stuff about, because of course we are in the age of information overload, unless you're the president of the United States. But
that would be information underload.
Yeah, no kidding. Photos had leaked out of Steve Rogers in the original Captain America outfit, and it's like, oh my god, this must mean it's time travel and blah blah blah. It's like, okay, so it could be time travel, or it could simply be a simulation of, because they established that when Tony Stark was searching his memories and they had the 18-19 year old version of Tony Stark having an argument with his folks, and it simply could be that. And now there's more talk about, well, he's not actually Nomad, but we've kind of picked up some of the characteristics of Nomad, but we're not going to call him Nomad. There's tons of buzz about this film and exactly what it portends. Chris Hemsworth, we talked about this before, Chris Hemsworth has come out and said he wants to keep playing Thor, even though his contract will have run out after the second Avengers film. And of course, why wouldn't he want to keep playing Thor? It appears to be fun and it pays well. So, you know,
yeah.
Steve Rogers, hasn't really been any buzz that I've seen, serious buzz, about who will eventually take over the role, because at some point.
No, in the books, Falcon became Captain America.
Right, and I really hope they go with that route. I'd much rather see that than them go with Bucky turning into Captain America. I'm okay with if it turns out to be him eventually, but, I mean, the times kind of cry out for Falcon to take over that role. And frankly, I think that's a more interesting, that would be a more interesting storyline than Bucky. Because
I'll agree.
Bucky has to come back from the dark side, so to speak. But I mean, he was programmed, so he never really intentionally was evil or anything like that. I mean, he's other than the happenstance of a fall, he could have been Captain America to begin with instead of Steve. So that's not really anything really interesting in that storyline to me. Whereas especially in having Anthony Mackie, because I love that actor, he's so awesome. I would love for him to get to play Captain America, even if it's just for one freaking movie. And then they change things over, and I hope they wouldn't do that. But I really love to see him play that role. That would be awesome. And the character is a really interesting character too. I think it would add a lot to it. So hopefully this is one of the 22 films that Kevin has planned. 22 more films. Unbelievable.
Well, I'm wondering now, because this came out this week, if the forthcoming Venom movie that Sony is making is going to count, because Tom Holland is in it.
Apparently he is,
Not as Spider-Man, but as Peter Parker.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. So I don't really know how that's going to work, but do you think that's actually going to end up being part of the MCU now?
From what Marvel says, no. So doesn't count as part of the 22. I'm all for that, as long as Marvel continues to give them advice, as they apparently gave them for Spider-Man Homecoming, because that was a great film. That was fun. Yeah. That was, to me, the best Spider-Man film. And I really, really liked the first two Spider-Man films. After that, not so much. Which is, there's a reason they came back to Marvel and said, hey, how do we do this? So, yeah, I'm all for that.
Why, yes, we do.
Yeah, this is exactly what you do. Ignore what you've done, and for God's sakes, don't look at DC.
I'll get to that in a minute.
they're about to shoot themselves in the foot again, apparently. Anyway, Yeah, Marvel. It's amazing how well their plan has worked. I mean, have they had some misfires along the way for their standards? Yeah, but even given that,
Inhumans.
Well, I wasn't even talking about that. I was talking about the theatrical release. You know, because Thor: Dark World, Iron Man 2, it's a little shaky.
If the movie has a 2 in it,
yeah. But did they bounce back? Absolutely. Yes. And those films aren't bad films to me. They just they suffer in comparison. So,
like Porco Rosso, not quite up to Miyazaki.
There you go. But it's still Miyazaki, so therefore it still should be watched.
Now, did you see the sneak peek of Cloak and Dagger, which Marvel's putting out on the Freeform network?
Nay, I did not, sir.
They released about 2 or 3 minutes of it. And frankly, I was hoping that they would do it after they got their powers, because before, they're just two teenagers at a party, and I don't really care. Make them more interesting to me, but it looks like it has potential. They get their powers at the end of this clip, inexplicably. It's just all of a sudden, poof, we have powers now. Huh, really? But Marvel's doing this heavy push on their teen heroes. I mean, with Cloak and Dagger, Runaways, whatever the one Squirrel Girl is in, which I think is a horrible character. But heavy pushing on the teen thing at the same time that all the older guys' contracts are expiring.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think we're actually headed toward a full-on Marvel youth movement? And is that going to... Yeah, I know it's not going to kill it off, but at the same time, is that going to help?
I think that's more TV, because the youth movement, as far as the films are concerned, is Spider-Man, and that's it. And that was brilliant, because to me, that's Spider-Man. Is
Spider-Man supposed to be a teenager?
Yeah, he's the 15-year-old geeky kid. He's not the college kid. I mean, that's not the iteration that should be looked at to me. So,
agree.
Yeah, I think it's just more. And it's probably smart to me, because it gives them more separation. Because like the Netflix Marvel characters, I mean, I love most of those shows, but they deserve to be on the big screen for me, because those are major characters. The characters in Runaways, Cloak and Dagger, I mean, talk about when Marvel first kicked this thing off, they started with the Hulk, but they started with Iron Man, because they didn't have the rights to the big hitters. They started with their secondary characters. The Runaways, Cloak and Dagger, I mean, are they...
Cloak and Dagger were big in the 80s, but I have not seen them since.
What are they? Are they quaternary characters? Because to me, they're not even tertiary. I mean, they're so off on the fringe.
They were secondary for about 5 years, 84 to 89.
They were secondary characters 30 years ago. They're right at the forefront of the public's consciousness. TV is fine for those characters. And I hope those shows are great. That would be terrific. But I think they're much more likely, maybe because Black Panther basically is just the character, obviously. The film won't be out until next month. Which, by the way, apparently it sold out of the preliminary release of the advanced tickets, which is kind of cool. There was a story that Lupita Nyong'o could not even get a ticket because they were sold out. It was like, you shouldn't have to pay for your own ticket since you're one of the stars. But that's kind of an interesting take on that. So hopefully this is a huge smash, because it's also an awesome character, and I really like what they've done so far with it. But they'll move on. I mean, they're just Ant-Man and the Wasp. I mean, they'll keep on moving on with that. Yeah. And hopefully Anthony Mackie as Captain America. That would be so sweet. I mean, if we're going to lose Chris Evans, I was saying, put it that way.
Staying with TV and teenagers, I guess, the TV series Heathers that is forthcoming is technically an adaptation of the 1988 cult classic, but the series creator, Jason McAuliffe, possibly, I don't know how you pronounce that, said the show will still find ways to put a new spin on the story. So if I understand this correctly, what he's saying is that he has a story that isn't as good as the original and is technically different enough to warrant a different name so as not to piss off fans of the originals, but not good enough to warrant an original name, so it's not really good enough to stand on its own. Do I understand this correctly?
Well, it's based on Lee's life, so I'm curious to see what he makes.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I'm married to Winona Ryder right now, so I mean, we're happy. We're happy.
So that was my job.
Oh, what?
Damn.
To marry me
being
or
to Winona Ryder?
Oh, okay. I was thinking, whoa, things got weird all of a sudden. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but yeah. So no, it's I like the. You know what? I think I've seen the original probably once, and probably when it was at the theater, but I don't remember. I remember the people who were in it. I don't remember. I just remember it being a weird movie, but it hasn't stuck with me at all. I don't really have any interest in watching some inferior TV play of the movie as well, or some take on it anyway.
I'm not sure we're the target audience, but that's okay. Speaking of target audiences and rehashes and remakes, Steven Spielberg is supposed to be making Indiana Jones 5. And the big rumor now is that Chris Pratt is going to be in the movie with him, which I think, if I'm counting this correctly, Todd, back me up, I think this has him overtake Chris Pine in the I have to be in every damn movie that comes out category.
For Christmas. He'd be second.
I think it's by one now.
He'd be second behind Chris Hardwick, yeah.
Right.
I believe so.
At least Pine and Pratt are worth watching, though. I mean, even if they're a bunch of movies, they're entertaining to watch.
Oh, definitely they are. So, Chris Pratt, Chris Pine, Chris Evans,
Chris Hardwick,
Chris Hemsworth, who would make the best Indiana Jones of those four Chrises? And Hardwick obviously is the prime choice, but he's busy because he's at 17 other shows, so he can't do it.
Oh, darn. As much as I don't actually want to see it, I would probably say Chris Pratt. I'd like to just create, if you're going to make more of them, just make another character and give him a different name and say, in the vein of Indiana Jones, we have this new guy, Kansas Smith, you know, whatever.
makes as much sense.
Oklahoma Davis.
We named the cat Kansas. No, I'm just kidding.
They named the dog Toto. Stop remaking stuff. Start trying to do something, at least pretend it's original.
Yeah,
kind of like who is this guy? Juan Carlos Fresnadillo, a name I've probably butchered, is trying to remake Disney's 1963 version of The Sword and the Stone, and I'm pretty sure they've already done this repeatedly. Excalibur comes to mind.
We've seen a few King Arthur movies. Exactly.
Is this the live, like a TV thing that they've been doing? Is that what this is?
Well, no, it's like how they're remaking Aladdin, only with actual Will Smith and actual...
Oh, gotcha.
...browned-up actress. Or the live-action Little Mermaid and...
Although Beauty and the Beast was good.
Beauty and the Beast was... Thank you. I could not come up with it. I was like, it's Hermione, but different.
Beauty and the Beast was exceptional. Yeah, I thought it was really good. True.
And that's what they're doing. That's what it seems like they're doing with all their movies, just moving down the list.
Yeah, but do you think it's because a lot of them, what they've done is they had a film that did well at the theater, they've made it into a Broadway play, and then they're bringing it back as a live action film. It's kind of strange, but that seems to, it's happened with Beauty and the Beast.
Lion
happened
King.
So I mean, it's almost seems like that's the trajectory of their films at this point. They plotted it out beforehand. Hey, if this film does well, we'll make it into a Broadway play and make a bunch of money doing that, and then bring it back as a live action film, make a bunch of money doing that.
I don't know that that's necessary, but that seems to be.
No, I don't think it's necessary. It's Disney, so it's all about the buck. If I could go back to Raiders for just a second, or Indiana Jones. Raiders is my favorite film ever, and actually just saw the film last week. Knoxville Symphony did the music and showed the film.
That's cool.
Yeah, they did that with another film too, and they're doing the second Harry Potter that way. But it was really cool the way they did it, and it really made me. The difference to me is that I think there's a lot at like Pratt. I like Pratt, but the thing that, and this is going to sound weird probably, but Harrison Ford, when he was doing his snarkiness, it was with a bit of a mature snarkiness instead of a juvenile snarkiness. And I think what happens is a lot of people who try to bring in that Indiana Jones role. They're trying to be, oh, I'm going to be facetious and sarcastic and ha ha ha. But it's done with a juvenile scent of bent, kind of bent to it, instead of a mature bent to it. And I think there's that little gray area in the acting, which I don't think Harrison Ford has anymore, to be honest. And I don't want to see another Indiana Jones. The fourth one was horrible. I don't want to see a fifth one. But I don't see Harrison Ford being really the guy who can do it. And I don't see any other actors who really, in this day and age, can really do that. So I know that Spielberg wants to do it, and you also have West Side Story, which actually sounds interesting.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't want to see an indie.
As long as it doesn't, Indiana Jones does West Side Story.
That's what they, you know, one article I read, it actually, that's what it looked like.
It was, I know. Like, oh, I've, really cool. Probably the same article I read and went, please don't do that.
Indiana Jones does West Side Story. Yeah, I think you hit dead on it, because Harrison Ford has, I wouldn't say it's unique, but it's kind of a rare quality where he can be snarky, but in a more mature way. And it's just different. It's hard to pull off, as you know. That's one of the big worries about the upcoming Solo film. Those are kind of big shoes to fill. And the fact that we still don't have a trailer for it, right? So that's kind of interesting. It's like,
well, they're doing more reshoots.
Yeah, that's kind of scary. But yeah, I don't think we need another Indiana Jones film. Two, I really didn't. I know I'm in the minority probably, but I really didn't enjoy Temple of Doom. I thought that went overboard with the horror aspect, and the female lead was terrible. When you jump, I mean, that's a huge drop from going to Karen Allen to Steve's girlfriend / wife. I mean, good God. That was
Raiders and Last Crusade
awful.
Are far and away better than the other two films.
Yeah. Okay. Last Crusade I really enjoyed, because it got it back on track. That was fun. And it was like, okay, now he actually gets to really go after the Nazis, which is cool. And Sean Connery.
Although if you look at the order, it's actually supposed to go Temple of Doom first, because that took place before Raiders.
Right. And it's not a good film, but yeah, compared to the
numbering fourth, Yoda did for those two.
Mm. Yeah. That last one was such a dog. I'm not really thrilled looking forward to this. I don't really care who plays the character. Cause like you said, it's like, do something similar, but make it different. At the best, at least Mutt won't be coming back. So that's a blessing.
Yay. Although I do have some good news about people coming back in this, in a movie, Incredibles 2, right? The entire voiced cast is back except one. Spencer Fox, who voiced Dash, is not coming back to play Dash, because since 2004, for some reason, he went through puberty and his voice changed.
That's idiot.
That actually is the reason they gave. They said, we wanted him back, but all of a sudden, he has a deep voice, and hi, I'm Dash. And that just, continuity errors. So that didn't happen.
We could have played
more. Other than that, I think it's great they got the whole cast. So
that's so sad. That makes me sad for him.
But that's okay. Speaking of speedsters, and now we get into the DC stuff. Kid Flash is going to be added to DC's Legends of Tomorrow. Do you care?
Since I've seen three episodes of Legends of Tomorrow, nope, don't care a bit.
Yeah, I still watch it, and I'm not much caring for it either. ready? Watch this. This is going to be the quickest review we've ever had on the show, because this movie is not worth it. My daughter is a big fan of the DC animated the shows. My 9-year-old loves Super Friends, which I think is great. So she's into the whole Batman thing, and she loves Scooby-Doo. So when they came out with the movie, Scooby-Doo meets Batman the Brave and the Bold, we had to get it. And I will give them this. It started off like one of the old Scooby-Doo movies with that whole opening credit thing, which I thought was brilliant. And it immediately went downhill from there. You remember how the Batman Harley Quinn animated movie came out, and we kind of looked at it and went, ew, why did you do that?
Mm-hmm.
In this movie, about 3/4 of the way through, some of the characters start looking at each other and going, why is this movie taking so long? why haven't we figured it out yet? We should have figured this out, and the movie should be over by now, but it's not. That's a hint. It was just not good. So another, you know, if we watch movies so you don't have to, we'll save you the trouble. Skip this. And I don't want to say this because we normally like the DC animated movies, but I'm thinking the next one that comes out, actually the next one that comes out is Gotham by Gaslight, which I don't know enough about yet. But the trailer for the next Suicide Squad animated movie came out called Hell to Pay. And I'm already going to go with skip it. And I don't want to do that because I like it when they go the main storyline of the DC animated movies. This one uses the new 52 version of Amanda Waller, meaning she's skinny, which is just wrong. The story doesn't look anywhere near as interesting as their first one, which was Assault on Arkham, which I thought was an awfully fun DC movie.
It was.
The purpose of this one, we have to get Vandal Savage's immortal DNA. Why? They don't actually explain that, and they don't really explain who Vandal Savage is, nor do they explain that he's immortal, which I'm giving you, you know, spoiler, for those of you who don't know who he is. I'm starting to be disappointed by their animated movies now, and I don't like that, because I like the DC characters more than I like the Marvel ones.
So they're not fighting Vandal Savage, they're just trying to get his DNA.
It's my understanding that there's the Suicide Squad and another group of bad guys that are doing the same thing. Kind of like, you remember when they came out with Deep Impact and Armageddon at the same time? Mm-hmm. It's kind of like that, only instead of putting out movies about meteors striking the planet, it's let's go get Vandal Savage's DNA using bad guys.
That's sad.
I agree.
But this is a plus to me. Christian Slater's apparently doing the voice of Deadshot. I like that.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Bonus points.
That's bonus points for sure, because that was not the right character for Will Smith.
No.
In the live action version. That
didn't make sense.
Biggest problem with the movie is, oh, let's make Deadshot a sympathetic family guy. He's so sweet. The only reason they did that is because it was freaking Will Smith.
If it was anybody else,
yeah,
they're not going to do that.
They would have played the character correctly, and the movie would have been not much better, but it would have been better.
Slightly, anyway.
Yeah.
So, that's a bummer note to end the show on, but that's all I've got.
Well,
you got to bring up this show. Lee, yes. It's your turn. Perk us up a bit. Tell us more about Paddington.
I saw Ironweed.
My kids loved it.
Fiona was confused, and the Tom Waits character made her cry. But actually, I did see. Have you guys seen the? Todd mentioned the movie that was Ghost Story. You guys should. Netflix has Naruto playing right now. You guys should watch that.
Did I?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Gael Garcia Bernal anyway, who's you know, Mozart in the Jungle, but he's Motorcycle Diaries been a lot. Spanish language film. He plays a cop in this, and Pablo Neruda, of course, is the poet Senate member of the Chile. And this takes place at the right after World War II, so there's a lot of fear about communism in Chile, and it just really shows it shows Neruda and how he has to kind of hide out and then go to Argentina until good stuff becomes part of the. Oh, that just made me sound pro-communist. So I'll say it again. Good stuff became part of the Chilean government again. But it's really well acted. I think it was nominated for best foreign film. Gosh, maybe last year it was nominated. It's definitely worth seeing, especially if you have Netflix. It's probably an hour and 45 minutes long. Director does some. I think it's Pablo Larraín. Does some really fun stuff with the film. So it's not like I'm watching a biopic. It's actually, he does some interesting things with it. Definitely worth seeing for anybody who has Netflix. It's subtitled. So for anybody Trumpsters out there, I apologize. You won't watch it anyway because it's Spanish, but make sure you can read.
I'm glad you mentioned, and I will work it into my viewing schedule, hopefully this week. I'm glad you mentioned Netflix as I came across this story briefly. There is a website called Flixable. It's like Fixable, but with an L, Flixable, which lets you index basically everything on Netflix. It's very cool. You select the genre, you select the IMDb rating, and you can decide what to order, and you can pick the release year. So, for instance, if you want to know what Netflix has among, let's say, comedies that were released between the years 19... let's go for the 70s. 1970 through 1979.
83.
Okay, we'll go to 83 since you had to go there. And let's say I only want anything that has an IMDb rating of 7+. So these are all the comedies released between 1970 and 1983 that are on Netflix. And there are a whopping 5 films that Netflix has. Well, an IMDb rating of 7 is Richard Pryor Live in Concert, Willy Wonka, Trading Places, Caddyshack, and then an Indian film, Manoranjan. But it's a quick way to find, okay, well, I want to watch a good movie, and I kind of want to watch an action picture. Let's see, I want to see something that was made in the 60s because I'm weird, and they won't have anything, I'm guaranteeing.
What's the name of it again?
It's called Flixable, FLIXABLE. .co, not .com, but .co. For instance, this is not really what Netflix is for, but for instance, Action Adventure Pictures released between the years 1940 and 1971 that are rated 8+, there are none on Netflix. And it's really not for classic films. If you could drop all the way down to 5+, The African Queen is not an 8 on IMDb. What the hell is wrong with people? 7.9, okay. And The Longest Day. Those are the two films that Netflix has that were released from the 40s to the 70s. Action-adventure flicks that are 7. But, I mean, it's cool. So if you want to... Unfortunately, they don't let you do a cap. Like, ooh, what are the worst films that Netflix has? And you could go for that. But and then you, get, of course, get pages and pages. But it's kind of a quick way... To jump in there. I mean, they don't really have... Well, let's see if they do. I don't think they have links that'll just pop you into Netflix. Oh, they do.
There's a movie called A Boy Called Poe. He grows up to be a starfighter with the Rebellion. Or a Teletubby. Tune in to find out.
But anyway, that's a cool little site that someone just did as kind of a programming adventure.
That is kind of cool.
Which is nice, because searching for things on Netflix, it's much better than Amazon Prime. But it's still not as great as it could be, and this really fixes that.
Ooh,
I like that.
Okay, so scroll to the bottom of flixable.co if you're there, mm-hmm. and look at this picture of the guy on yoga, the architecture of peace. Seriously,
all the way to the bottom.
It's at the very bottom, and I'm looking at this picture and going, okay, ow. You're not supposed to bend that way. I know it's a yoga movie, but wow. In other words, yoga movies.
That
looks painful.
What category are you looking at, Pervo?
It's just the front page of
it's Flixable. The front page.
I see.
And it's January 10th. It's the last.
Yeah. Final. New movies that came out on January 10th. It's this guy who has his foot, what, left foot on the right side of his head. And, ow.
And coincidentally
enough.
That's
a painful way to end the show. But
Captain Underpants. Captain Underpants also, January 10th.
Yeah.
There we go. The first epic movie, 6.2. Must be why they wanted it.
There you go. And that sounds like a good place to end the show. So,
no.
I guess.
It's not. This is on Netflix. Okay. Manolo, The Boy Who Made Shoes for Lizards. I am going to watch that right now.
Now that we have something to do. Okay. I'll see you next week, everybody.
Captain, we're losing power in the warp engines.
I think we should be leaving now.
I'm going to go home and sleep with my wife.
And on that unusually harmonious bombshell, it is time to end.
I am very disappointed!
Man, we have a weird job.
It's shameful, but it's a living.
And like that, he's gone.
Darn, that's the end.